The demand for fresh, local food continues to grow. But farmers markets are not just about shopping. Today, farmers markets in Iowa and throughout the Midwest. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Most food stores are designed to be quick and convenient. Farmers markets are about freshness and fun. This hour, I'll talk with Janine McLaughlin, author of Farmers Markets of the Heartland. She'll introduce us to farmers markets around the Midwest, and I'll talk with market masters of the farmers markets in Des Moines, Washington, and Cedar Falls. We also want to hear from you. Why do you love your farmers market? Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It still doesn't feel like summer, but the landscape is lush and green, and farmers markets are in full bloom. This hour, we'll talk about farmers markets of the Midwest and, of course, of Iowa. Later in the hour, I'll talk with market masters from Des Moines, Washington, and Cedar Falls. My first guest today has visited farmers markets all over. Janine McLaughlin has an impressive culinary resume, and she's also the author of Farmers Markets of the Midwest. She's with us on the phone today. Hello, Janine.
Hello, Charity. I'm so happy to be with you.
Well, thank you for being here today. And tell me when you first fell in love with farmers markets.
You know, I tell a story about being at a farmer's market as an adult, actually, and tasting a strawberry that was red all the way through and bursting with flavor. And now farmers markets are almost everywhere. But at the time, there weren't as many, and people got berries from the supermarket where they came from very far. They tasted like water. They were hollow in the middle and didn't have very much texture at all. And when I tasted this, it was like an explosion in my brain. It kind of opened a whole new world for me. And so to write Farmers Markets of the Heartland, I went to 8 Midwestern states, visited dozens of markets, and tasted a lot of great strawberries.
When did you first taste those strawberries? How long ago was that?
That was probably, I'm going to be dating myself, probably in the early 90s, I want to say. I was an adult. In fact, I asked my mother, why did we never shop at the farmer's market when we were growing up? And she said, you know what, I think we didn't have one. And so when I was doing my research, I found that markets were the way people bought food in the early part of the 1900s, but then with the advent of the supermarket and as grocery stores consolidated their purchasing, small farms and farmers markets just became on the wane. And then in 1976, there was an act of Congress called the Farm to Consumer Direct Marketing Act, which kind of opened the door for people to, farmers to sell direct to people who wanted to buy from them. There were, you know, I know that people who pay attention to public policy can see how things are cobbled together. And for a while, it was considered more sanitary to have food in a supermarket as opposed to an open air market.
When you first discovered farmers markets and really fell in love with that kind of fresh food, you also were spending time with some great chefs and many other people in the culinary world. And you write in your introduction to your book that you were surprised that not everyone was as enamored with farmers markets as you were. What do you think the resistance was?
You know, I think, isn't it funny that we're surprised that people aren't exactly like us? I was teaching a cooking class once, and someone raised her hand, and she said, Janine, I can't shop at the farmer's market. I can't add one more thing. And it was an eye-opener for me in terms of understanding that sometimes people are busy, and for someone like me who enjoys just strolling the market and smelling everything and meeting people, you know, it's like the new town square where you're just surrounded by kindred spirits and all these visual things that you know you can take home and taste. But other people look at food as fuel, and they have children that need to get to soccer and ballet, and they need to get to the office and you know, that's contrasted by a friend of mine who gets her children out of bed, goes to the farmer's market at 7 a.m., takes them to school, and then gets to the office by 9, and that's her Wednesday morning. So not everyone is as enthusiastic, but my hope is that people will become more enthusiastic when they are able to experience that.
Well, you talk about discovering farmers markets in the early 90s. How have you seen the farmers market scene change in the last 25 years?
Couple of decades, yes. For the most part, farmers markets have exploded. So I had a stat in my book, which is the United States Department of Agriculture has a census, and they have a stat that in 1994 there were 1,775 farmers markets in the United States, and in 2010, there were more than 6,100. And so that's just an explosion. The curve is way up. So what I've seen is there are a lot more markets, and as there are more markets, there's more competition between farmers, and that's good for consumers because, for example, we can't have everyone selling the same things because no one will be able to, you know, grab what marketing people call, you know, market share. And so what I've seen is there are some vegetable producers who will specialize in Asian vegetables, for example, or Italian greens. I've seen a lot of specialty cheeses that have come to the market. So I've seen things like businesses being incubated, artisan foods like cured meats and different kinds of honeys and things like that, as well as diversity in terms of the sorts of produce you can buy. One of the things that was really fun to find out also is I met what I call, or a man I call, the father of the Honeycrisp apple, and Honeycrisps have been around for a little bit more than 20 years. They were developed by the University of Minnesota, and farmers who have orchards have told me that that's such a popular apple that people flock. They try to go early to get Honeycrisp before they sell out from the table and have to choose something else.
What makes a good market? I mean, you've been to so many different farmers markets around the Midwest. What sets a really great farmers market apart?
You know what I found is no matter how big or small a market, people love their farmers market. I went to Grinnell, Iowa. They had about 6 vendors, and I ran into some of the university students there, and they were buying some food to take back to the dorm to share, and they talked about having an all-local Thanksgiving where one of the professors was raising turkeys in the backyard, and they were working with the farmers at the market to get all their squashes and things like that. And then, of course, Des Moines is such a big market. But what I think makes the most attractive market is to have that variety. You know, there are some people who have different schools of thought. Some like to have activities for children, face paintings, things like that. And some say it should only be about the food and nothing but the food. But I think whatever brings people together for that shared experience is what makes a farmer's market so attractive.
Now, you have kind of perfected your system of going to a farmer's market. So give us some advice. When you shop at a farmer's market, how should you prepare yourself?
Well, my first advice would be go early before it gets too crowded. As farmer's markets become more and more popular, it's really hard to have time to browse, to talk to the farmer. A lot of farmers are really great cooks, and they will tell you how to make different kinds of food if you see something that surprises you. The other thing that I would suggest is that kind of calculate in your mind how many meals, how many snacks. It's very easy to overbuy. And sometimes people just get stars in their eyes and get way too much and don't have enough of a plan to eat it. Although preserving is huge. My site is rustickitchen.com, and I posted the other day a strawberry jam recipe because I spotted strawberries for the first time this year. And so if you are interested in learning about preserving, whether it be pickling or making jam, that's a great way to have a strategy to eat up your food. And then, you know, again, if you're there early and it's more relaxed, you can talk to other people about what they're buying and how they make it. Depending on where you live, if you're near a city with a lot of chefs that shop the farmers market, a lot of them show up in their white jackets, and you can kind of trail them and find out what they're buying. And what I also found is every once in a while, a chef will forget to pick up an order, so you can score some really great, you know, custom-grown onions or things like that. So just be open to, and be flexible and think about, you know, what you're going to do when you get home.
And for a lot of people, I think that there is a real challenge. They go to the farmers market, they see all this fresh produce, it looks beautiful, and they buy it, and then they get home and they think, what on earth do I do with this?
You know, there are a lot of resources, and what I find with really great fresh food that's flavorful from the farmers market, you don't have to do a lot with it. Sometimes it's just more assembling ingredients and not overcooking. For example, we have asparagus now, and the way I like to do it is just drizzle it with a little oil and sprinkle it with salt and then roast it really high for not too long. The thing with asparagus is you can bend it to break it, and it will naturally break where the tough part starts, so you don't even have to peel it for the most part. And that's just very simple. A lot of times I'll just go home and have a grilled salad and have that over greens, and it just feels very substantial. It's also radish season, and I have a recipe in Farmers Markets of the Heartland where a chef in Chicago, Bruce Sherman from North Pond, gave me a recipe where you cut radishes into small julienne pieces, which is like matchstick sizes, and just blend in softened butter and put some herbs in there, and it's something that's great on toast or just, you know, kind of a punctuation up to the side of your grilled asparagus salad. So all these things are very simple and easy to prepare, so you really don't have to try too hard.
Is there a mindset that you need to make sure that you have when you shop at the farmers market? I mean, we've talked about people not having enough time, and of course, grocery stores are designed to be quick and convenient. Farmers markets are, for the most part, really not. So do you need to go in with a different frame of mind?
You know, you need to go in wanting the experience, because, you know, that's one of the things that's really clear is you're not going to be able to get your laundry detergent at the farmer's market. So it's always going to be an extra stop. But for me, the pleasure of the experience and the inspiration of being able to try new things, I think that's what's exciting, is you don't always know exactly what's going to be there, because it's agriculture and we're at the mercy of the weather sometimes. And so it's kind of an adventure every week to find out what's new and see what you might want to try. And then also,
we need to take a short break, Janine. We'll be right back in a moment. I'm talking to Janine McLaughlin, author of Farmers Markets of the Heartland. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about farmers markets around the Midwest and also around the state of Iowa. In a couple of minutes, I'll introduce directors and market masters from the farmers markets in Des Moines, Washington, and Cedar Falls. With me is Janine McLaughlin. She's the author of Farmers Markets of the Heartland. And we're going to focus on farmers markets from the director's perspective for most of the hour. But first, we're going to get the perspective of a vendor. Eric Menzel is on the line. He is a farmer who lives in Solon. He runs Salt Fork Farms with his wife, Eve. They have a CSA, so people can buy shares in their farm. They do direct sales, and they also sell at the farmers market. Hello, Eric.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for chatting with us for a few minutes. And how many farmers markets do you sell at?
We only sell at the Iowa City Farmers Market, actually, on Saturdays.
All right. So tell me what you have to do to get prepared for selling on a Saturday.
Well, you have to have a whole kit, I guess, of things that you usually have ready to go tables and tents and accoutrements, you know, signage, boards. You have to have, of course, a little cash box. And we carry a scale with us because we weigh some of the things that we sell. You have to have licenses of all sorts, especially when you're doing meat and eggs like we do. And on top of that, we started doing a breakfast prepared foods portion of our stand. So we basically have a mobile kitchen that we bring with us as well.
Wow. So how early do you start preparing for a Saturday?
Well, ideally, you're getting ready, you know, by Tuesday or Wednesday, in our case. You know, things get harvested at their peak, so we try to do them as close to market as possible, but we don't want them to get overgrown. But a lot of times, Friday is the big day, and then in the morning on Saturday, I'll be up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And what time do you need to arrive at the market to get everything set up?
We get there just after 6.
And you say we. How many people do you bring along with you to try to manage all of this?
Just one. Me and Jeffrey Schworn run our stand.
How do you know how much stuff to bring?
You don't. you just bring, it's experience is a little bit of it, but farmers market can be sort of fickle, especially in a town like Iowa City where you have a very mobile population. You have school being a big part of the population, and when school's out, people leave and things like that. So it's hard to gauge. Also, Saturday is a big day in any community for other events going on, so you don't know if that's going to bring people to the market or draw them away.
How much does the weather affect business? In Iowa City, the farmers market is in a parking ramp, so you can get rained on and it's okay, but I'm guessing people still don't come out in as big a numbers.
Right. The market has expanded to outside as well, so those people definitely take it harder personally because they're out in the rain, but the crowd is also lessened by bad weather. But you'll find that if there's, you know, like I say, if the people are around and they want their food, they'll come.
Is it fun?
It's a lot of energy, yeah. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of interactivity with the community, with individuals. You gain, you know, loyal customers that come weekly. And that part of it, you know, you build a personal and a business relationship with those people. And then you meet new people all the time. So it is a lot of fun.
How much of your business does the income from the farmers market make up, do you think?
I would say about half. We also, we actually do our CSA business at the farmers market. But we also sell to restaurants too. So it comes out to about half of our business.
And how much time does it take you to recover from a Saturday? If you're up probably late Friday night, you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning on Saturday morning, you spend most of your day outside selling. How long does it take to get over that?
Well, you know, I guess 3 o'clock in the morning and then you're done by about 1. And then you got to go home and clean everything up and unpack it. And then you got to run the farm still. So you really aren't done that day until you go to bed. So Sunday is kind of a slower day.
All right. Well, Eric, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Menzel runs Salt Fork Farms in Solon with his wife Eve, and they sell at the Iowa City Farmers Market on Saturdays. And I want to bring our market masters into the conversation now, too. We'll start with Kelly Foss, who's director of the Downtown Farmers Market in Des Moines. Hello, Kelly.
Well, hello, Charity. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here today. And earlier in the conversation, Janine mentioned in 1976 the Farm to Consumer Direct Marketing Act, and I noticed coincidentally that the Downtown Farmers Market in Des Moines began in 1976.
It sure did.
And when it started small, but it's a big market now. How big is it?
Well, it spans about 9 city blocks through downtown in the Court District. And we have about 200 vendors on site selling at the market every week. And we also have another additional 100 vendors who are on our, what we call on our roster. So we kind of have a rotating roster for vendors who may have seasonal products. So they may not be there every week. The occasional vendors kind of rotate in depending on the product they sell. So we have different artists and different prepared food and bakers that participate every week. So we say, you can never say I've been there, done that, because it's different every single week.
And the market starts the first Saturday of May, no matter what. And this year it felt like winter on the first Saturday of May.
It did. I don't think we saw 37 degrees on the first Saturday of May here in Des Moines anyhow. And it was very chilly. It didn't seem like we should be opening the farmers market on that day.
But did people come?
People did. We have very loyal and dedicated vendors. Our vendors showed up. They were probably not as excited as they would have been if it was sunny and 70, but really dedicated. And our market patrons just were really hungry to get to the market. And literally speaking, we were a little low on produce, obviously, because it was a chilly spring. But we did have produce. We have a lot of vendors who use hoop houses and greenhouses and, you know, different techniques to extend their seasons and to be able to grow when it's chilly. But also our farmers market, we also have other growers that don't rely on produce, so meats and cheeses and baked goods and things like that. So opening day was chilly, but we had quite a full market and selection.
You've been director of the downtown farmers market for 13 years. Have you seen it change in that time?
Well, the thing that I notice the most is, you know, really people say, you know, tell me about the local foods movement and how is that affecting the farmers market and things like that. And then one of the main things that I'm noticing is, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, really farmers markets were really something that people weren't going to experience their communities necessarily. They were going to really just buy the produce. And if you weren't a foodie or you weren't somebody who cooked a lot, it really wasn't for you. You know, so it was really selective on who really could go there to shop. And what I've seen now is farmers markets are really mainstream. It's for everyone. And local foods are. You see them in grocery stores and they're highlighted in the produce aisles and things like that. So really, even if you're not a foodie, you're looking to find locally grown food and kind of get back to the roots of where food came from.
And of course, it has turned into a huge social event as well.
Exactly. And you know, I think that's a whole different conversation as well. I mean, I think the social experience is really because that's what people want and that's what people are kind of asking for. But at the same time, we want the families to come. We want it to be experience for them. And we want the families to embrace the market because they really are the future. I think a few years ago, the Iowa Department of Agriculture did a study on who goes to farmers markets. And the demographic was saying that the majority of people shopping at farmers markets were in their 60s, which is great. We love that people in their 60s are shopping farmers markets. But where were the families? Where were the 30-year-olds and the 20-year-olds? And I think they're at the market now. And that's what's going to keep farmers markets going.
I want to bring Joe Bohr into the conversation now. He is one of two market masters for the Cedar Falls Farmers Market. Hello, Joe.
Hi there. How are you this morning?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. How big is the Cedar Falls Market these days?
Cedar Falls Market has 40 vendors.
40 vendors. All right. And it's another Saturday market.
It's a Saturday morning.
Again, starting the first Saturday of May.
First Saturday of May, ending in the last Saturday in October.
And where is the market located?
The market is located in front of City Hall, downtown Cedar Falls. And it's along Overman Park. And we've got 1.5 blocks that the city provides for us on a Saturday morning.
Now, the market started in the 1980s. You've been as a market master for about the last 7 years, but you were also a vendor before that, right?
Yes, I've been a vendor for about somewhere between 15 and 20 years. I've lost count.
Tell me how you've seen the Cedar Falls market change in the time you've been involved in it.
Well, for one thing, the market has moved from one place to another since about 1980. We've been in about a half a dozen different places. But we've been in our permanent spot now for about the last 15 years. And because we do have the permanent spot, that has opened up. Everybody in town knows where we are, and they know what we provide. And so it's become a great social event, especially for our senior citizens on Saturday morning.
During the time that the farmers market has been in that spot, there's also been a real renaissance in downtown Cedar Falls. Does that feed the market, or do you think the market's feeding downtown?
I think it's complementary both ways. People come down to shop at the market, and then they head downtown, or they're downtown, they see that we've got a market open, and they come and shop at the market as well.
I want to bring yet another market master into the conversation now. Bob Shepherd is also with us. He's the market master in Washington, Iowa. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Charity.
And you don't have a Saturday morning market. You're on a little bit different schedule. Tell me about the Washington Farmers Market.
Yes, we don't have a Saturday market because when we redesigned the market back in 1988, Saturdays were, in this area, were pretty much dominated by the Iowa City market. It's a phenomenal, excellent market. So we changed and went to a Thursday evening to try to capture the people that were home. We're kind of a bedroom town to a certain extent, and we wanted to be open when the people were in Washington. So we went to Thursday evening.
You can have as many as 40 vendors in the height of the season, which is pretty impressive. I mean, Washington is much smaller than Cedar Falls,
yeah.
And you can have almost as many vendors.
Yeah, we look at, you were talking to Voss, Des Moines, the big city, big market. We consider ourselves to be a big market in a little city or a little town, and we have an unusually large market for a small town.
Why do you think that is?
A lot of work. People on both sides of the table have done an awful lot to make it work the right way. We do look at it as a social aspect. We did move it off of a parking lot, off the hot asphalt, onto the grass, under the trees, around the fountain in downtown Washington. And it's become a social event. When we moved it to downtown in 1988, it was with the support of then park board member Doc Taylor that felt that the parks should be for the people, and he said, this is an example. And because of that, we opened up how it was used. We now have Thursday evenings that start at, you know, before 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock is when our market starts. We have the market. Then it's 6:30, 7:30 is Thursday Night Live, which is local entertainment. And then the band plays later, and they've all come in since. So it's a big deal in Washington on Thursday evenings.
And Bob, you also are a charter member of the Iowa Farmers Markets Association, and we talk a lot about how demand for fresh food is driving the farmers market movement. But obviously there are people behind the scenes who have been working really hard to increase the demand for this kind of fresh food and this kind of environment. So you and others in the state have been working really hard to help markets get off the ground.
Yeah, when the Farmers Market Association, IFMA, got started, it was to help develop the markets. At the time, there were only 60-some markets, and it's exploded, just as we've heard earlier. Part of it was to try to assist different towns in setting up farmers markets. The idea of diversification, of finding a market for the diversified foods of the 80s, kind of drove it, got it started, and it's worked. You have to think about so many things: timing, when people are home, availability. You know, we moved up on the park because it was so much more delightful to be under the shade of the trees during the midsummer. There were a lot of things, and because of that, markets are better and better and better. They're actually driving, I think, the interest in diversification as far as the produce is being offered. You go to a store market today, a well-known chain, and what they are offering now is so much larger, variety-wise and everything else, than it ever was before, and I think that's part of the drive.
Well, definitely, and Janine, you write about that too, how farmers markets have created an opportunity for a lot of artisans who are making cheese and baking bread and doing things that they didn't even have an outlet for before.
Yes, what I found is this is a great way to start creating a relationship with their consumers and people who are interested in their foods. And it was so gratifying for me because when I went to do my road trip research a couple years ago, there were a number of vendors who were selling at the farmers markets, and now a couple years later, they have storefronts. There's the Cured Meats guy, Salumi Beddo, in St. Louis, and there's Hoosier Mama Pie Company, which is run by a woman who's from Indiana, that's Hoosier, and she has a shop in Chicago, and that just is multiplied on and on. I even met some people who started baking to raise money to send their daughter on a school trip, and now they sell at farmers market. So it's a very uplifting story.
Absolutely. Well, we will continue our conversation in just a moment. We're going to take a short break, but we also want to know why you shop at the farmers market. What do you love about your farmers market? 866-780-9100 is the number to call. With me today, Janine McLaughlin, author of Farmers Markets of the Heartland, Kelly Foss, director of the Downtown Farmers Market in Des Moines, Joe Bohr, Market Master in Cedar Falls, and Bob Shepard, Market Master in Washington. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour we're talking about farmers markets around the state of Iowa and around the Midwest. With me is Janine McLaughlin. She is the author of Farmers Markets of the Heartland. Bob Shepard is here. He is the Market Master in Washington, Iowa. He's also a charter member of the Iowa Farmers Markets Association. Joe Bohr is also here. He's one of two Market Masters for the Cedar Falls Farmers Market. And Kelly Foss is the director of the Downtown Farmers Market in Des Moines. And Kelly, I wanted to get your input as well on how you've seen some vendors really blossom because of the downtown Des Moines Farmers Market. I know that there are a lot of artisans who sell their products there. Do you have some insight on that?
We have so many vendors who have found success in growing their business, and some just started as a hobby, kind of as Janine mentioned, sort of time for it was their fun job. You know, they had a 40-hour-a-week job, and they were just doing, this is kind of their side, this is their hobby, I guess. One story I like to share is about Reichardt's Derriere. She is a goat cheese artisan, and she started out raising goats for her family who were not able to drink cow's milk, so they wanted goat's milk in the family, and she was producing so much goat milk that she started dabbling in making goat's cheese, and she came up with some really great recipes and started sharing with friends, preparing platters for parties for her friends. And she, I guess one of her friends told her, you should do that downtown farmers market. So she called me one afternoon and said, hey, Kelly, I heard I should participate in this farmer's market. I heard it's really great. And so I started talking to her about her art of making this goat cheese. And I said, have you ever visited the downtown farmer's market? Do you know the size of the farmer's market? Well, she'd never been there, but her friends had been. She has some friends who sell at the market. And I said, how much are you making? Well, I can make a couple batches, you know. And so I said, well, work on your craft and your production, and let's talk next year. But in the meantime, come down to the market. Let's walk the market. And so sort of these baby steps that took her to work on the production, but also kind of getting geared up for selling at a farmer's market, because it can be overwhelming for farmers and growers. And so this same person who started raising goats just for milk for her family is now an award-winning cheesemaker, and she's traveled the world and won awards through Europe and learned great recipes by visiting Italy for her goat cheese, and she sells here at our downtown farmers market. And she also sells locally to restaurants and small grocery stores and things like that. So that's just one story. There's so many success stories, but I love sharing my Kurt's Dairy story.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and Joe, with the vendors who come to your farmer's market, does your farmer's market have like a set rule for how far away a vendor can be or what kind of vendor can come to the market? Is there a playbook for that?
No. We have a limited space available with the block and a half that the city allows us to use right now. So we assign vendors at the beginning of the season. So we don't have any seasonal vendors per se that come in part of the year and then leave. All the spaces are assigned for the permanent 25, 26 weeks that we operate. And we have an application process. And so old vendors get to return, and then when we have spaces open up, then we have an application list that we have a committee that will evaluate and decide on new vendors depending upon what's best for the market.
All right. And Mickey from Des Moines has a question about being a vendor at a farmer's market. Hi, Mickey.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm very interested in this discussion, and I'm one of the hobbyists that are interested in selling things from my garden at a farmer's market, and someone told me I need to be concerned about liability issues in case someone gets sick and can prove it's from my strawberries. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Bob, would you like to address that?
Well, we hold that good practices are necessary. And it's up to each individual grower, whatever, to follow those good practices. We do keep an eye on it. Most of the growers and so forth do have an addition put onto their homeowner's insurance or whatever to help cover that. You know, if you're growing for yourself and you're being careful as far as how you care for it and everything else, you're probably going to be okay. But you do have to be very cognizant of the fact that it's in your hands. You know, we talk about here's your chance to meet the grower. You know, those hands that grew it are handing you the bag that's there. That's true. And that's also the hands that are protecting your food. So watch it.
All right. And Kelly, how about with prepared foods? How does that change when somebody is making foods like jams and jellies, that kind of thing, to sell at the market? What kind of restrictions are there?
Well, we do ask that all of our participating vendors do have a certificate of liability insurance. We want them to be covered. We want them to be protected. The state has some regulations regarding licensing people to sell value-added products such as the jams and the jellies, things like salsa and mustards. New this year, we have a vendor who is selling fermented foods, and that's kind of a first for at least our community. I believe our state inspectors weren't used to seeing that type of product. So things like kombucha or kimchi, if you're familiar with those fermented products, those are new at our market. And so I think they kind of struggled with figuring out how to regulate those types of products or how to make sure to keep them safe so that consumers would be safe. And I think our, you know, department and our inspectors are really smart about it and really try to just help the creators of these products prepare their products in a safe way. So, you know, there are regulations behind all this, but, you know, I think that if the artisan, the maker of the food, like Bob mentioned, is feeding this product to their family. I think they're really concerned about their consumer as well. And so we just want people to just really, use best practices and wash their products when they can and share with people, yeah, maybe my product is chemical free and things like that, but it's still good to wash it when you get home. Those types of things that, there might have been something, you know, to contaminate it on the way home. But same thing at the grocery store, same thing anywhere you go. You don't know really, did it fall on the floor? You know, those kinds of things. You don't know what it touched along the way. But with the local foods and buying directly from your farmer, it has a lot less chance of being contaminated on your way to the downtown market or any farmer's market.
And Joe, you've expressed some frustration with regulations. What causes problems?
Well, it's just a matter of interpreting what rules and regulations have been put out there, and making sure that you have contacted the state to get a list of what the appropriate rules and regulations happen to be. As the other people have been talking about, the state and federal government have both set limits requiring those special licenses, specialized products that can or cannot be sold at market, and just trying to track down exactly what the regulations are sometimes could be a problem.
Pogo is on the line next with a question also about vending. Hi, Pogo.
Hey, Charity. How you doing?
Good. What's your question today?
It's a good show. Well, Mike, you answered a bunch of my questions right there. Well, other than that, it's difficult to follow the rules. But as far as, like, products of wild game, wild plants, and fur, is that kind of a market-to-market thing? Are we looking at state regulations as far as that goes? Could you address that a little bit, please?
Bob, you're nodding your head, so you look like you have something to say.
Yeah, and it's just that a lot of different departments look at different things, and DNR takes precedent when it comes to like the morel mushroom and so forth, and you have to meet their standard. You have to get their permit. Same with game. You better check with them. We approve certain items, and then we say these are unapproved, but you can do it if you meet the requirements of the state or whoever has the jurisdiction, and that's just what you have to do. It's for the safety of the customer, and you have to follow that. I mean, that's strict. That's very strict.
All right, Pogo, thanks a lot for your call, and we asked people to call in and tell us what they love about their markets as well. June is on the line in Union County. Hi, June.
Hi.
Hey. Hi.
We have a fellow who came from Los Angeles, moved here from Los Angeles to Creston, and he had always loved the Los Angeles Farmers Market, and he brought some elements of that to our Farmers Market when he took over management of it, and we have live music every week, and it really creates a great community feeling. People bring their lawn chairs, and they sit, and they listen, and there's a lot of people just there to kind of get out and get around and do things with people. And then we've also got food that's served at a fundraiser, a local group who might be fundraising for something, serves food, or a local like the Hy-Vee or a restaurant comes and does food. So it's a real community. It's a great community kind of event. And the vendors love it, the people love it, and it's a great thing every Monday night. Come to the Creston Farmers Market.
Oh, it sounds great. It sounds like it's turned into a real draw.
Yeah, it's a great, great event.
Do you get people from a lot of the surrounding communities as well? Creston's not a very big town.
Well, it's the biggest town in Union County.
Right.
We do get some people from around the surrounding communities. Mostly just from Creston, though. People come in and do their week's fresh produce shopping and baked goods. But we've got vendors that come in from quite a ways, from surrounding counties and as far away as like Leon and up by the interstate and Missouri. Well, not Missouri. Not Missouri. They don't come in from Missouri. They come from the Missouri border down there and the counties down there. But because that's one thing is it's all local. It's all Iowa at our farmers market.
Oh, terrific.
Pride ourselves on that.
June, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And Janine, in your travels around visiting all these different farmers market, what do you think makes a successful vendor? What makes it worth their while?
Oh, there are so many complexities. In fact, when you organize a farmer's market, people think, oh, you just put up some tents and everybody comes. To be a successful vendor, my sense is that you need to have passion because, as we heard earlier, it is not an easy gig at all. And to really have that bond with your consumer so that you know what it is that's going to appeal to the consumer and what they're going to come back and buy again and again, because as farmers markets grow, there's more of a competition for that purchasing dollar, and so really find out what's going to resonate, what's going to appeal to people.
And does the charisma of the person doing the selling matter?
Oh, I hope not, because I have an egg farmer that is just a delightful person, and he's very shy, and he quit his day job because he wanted to farm full-time, and I was encouraging him to go to the farmer's market, and he said, well, I just have a hard time talking to people. But he has these great eggs, and the chickens are out pecking on the grass, and the yolks are so golden. They're like the sun, and so my hope is that with good quality products, that those will speak for themselves.
All right. But Bob here begs to differ.
I got to say, the really successful vendors, the successful farmers markets, are no shrinking violets. They are social animals, and they expound on their product and everything. Like you said, they have to have the drive. They have to have the passion.
And how big, and I'll let Janine let you have the first say on this, but how big do you think the farmers market movement can be? Is there still a lot of room for growth?
I think as there are more farmers markets starting up, what I find is some have challenges in terms of gaining traction, because you have to take shoppers away from other farmers markets. What I see as a big trend is what we call food hubs, and it's almost like where someone does the farmers market shopping for you, and you can either order online or phone or fax an order, and it's almost kind of a do-it-yourself CSA, and I see a lot of those growing and getting a lot of attention.
All right. Well, Janine, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. It's been great speaking with you.
Janine McLaughlin is the author of Farmers Markets of the Heartland. Also, Bob Shepherd, thank you so much for being here. Bob Shepherd is the market master in Washington, Iowa. He's also a charter member of the Iowa Farmers Markets Association. Kelly Foss, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity. It's been fun.
Kelly Foss is director of the Downtown Farmers Market in Des Moines. And Joe Bohr, thank you.
It has been a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Joe Bohr is one of two market masters in Cedar Falls. We've been talking about farmers markets all around the state of Iowa today. Talk of Iowa is produced by Ben Stanton, Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from John Pemble and Tony Daner. You can email us anytime. We'd love to hear your thoughts about things you've heard on the show, suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me now is Ben Kiefer, host of River to River. And it's Wednesday, Ben, so that means politics, right?
Of course, Charity. That means it is Politics Wednesday. But we're going to look outside the U.S. borders for the most of the show. Of course, the breaking news this morning, National Security Advisor Tom Donilon being replaced by United Nations Ambassador Susan Rice, Samantha Power to replace Rice at the U.N. We'll find out what these moves signal for national security and foreign policy. A few other things, of course, the riots in Turkey, the conflict in Syria, the civil war there, the drone policy here in the United States.
And who are your guests today?
My guests from Iowa State University. We always love having Jim McCormick on. Also with us, Lindsay Kahn of the University of Northern Iowa. So stay tuned at noon.
All right. Well, Ben Kiefer, thank you very much.
Thank you, Charity.
Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, we'll talk about the previously unpublished letters of the author Willa Cather, who have now been published for the very first time. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.